Regardless of where you are in your homesteading journey, whether you are just starting out or you've been at it for a while, there is no way that any of us can know absolutely everything when it comes under the homesteading umbrella. And this is where it is key that you are learning from people who have life experience and have been doing this homesteading when it comes to livestock in the kitchen, but they have been doing it for a long time so that you can bypass the mistakes that they have made along the way. And getting it delivered in your mailbox, in your hands every single month from some of the most trusted voices in homesteading is exactly what you need. And Homestead Living now has Homesteading Monthly, which is an in-print monthly magazine featuring articles from Joel Salatin, myself, Carolyn Thomas, as well as homesteaders who you may not have heard from them, but they have been perfecting their craft and are very much an expert in their area. You can get this for less than $2 an issue. Yes, that is an in-print, jam-packed with articles every single month. Go to homesteadliving.com and grab your subscription right now. Hey, Pioneers, welcome to episode number 390. Today's episode, we are going to be diving into raw milk and specifically the difference between A2A2 milk and A1. So if you've ever heard that term before, I know for some of you that will be familiar. You've probably heard people talk about A2A2 milk, but for others, that might not be something that you've ever heard, or maybe you've heard someone say A2 milk, but you didn't really know what that meant. So in today's episode, we are going to dive into that. And I love today's guest, well, for many reasons, as you will find out as we go through this episode, but I also love her story on her health journey, how she became aware of A2 milk, the role that that played in her healing, and how it has shaped her entire business and livelihood, and has also allowed her to help other people on their healing journey. So, without further ado, I am going to be introducing you to Katie Milhorn from Milhorn Farmstead. Katie is a dear friend of mine. She is my dairy mentor. And Katie is also my co-founder and partner with the Modern Homesteading Conference. And Katie is one of the largest, if not the largest, female raw dairy owner of dairies and operators in Idaho, which is the state that Katie is in. She is a wealth of information, and we dive into her health journey and story, talking about A2A2, what it is, why it's right for some people, the history there. But when Katie and I get together and start talking about cows, we just can't help ourselves. It's one of our favorite subjects. We have been known when we get together to sit and talk about cows and farming and raising them for hours. So I'm super excited for you to get to meet Katie and also get this information and hear it. So if you are watching this on YouTube, welcome. We are just getting started with posting the podcast episodes on YouTube. So welcome if you're discovering us there. If you're listening to this the old-fashioned way, through headphones, through an app, usually on your phone, then you can go to the blog post, which will be linked beneath the video version, at melissaknorris.com/390 in numerical, melissaknorris.com/390, because this is episode number 390. And you will find the written transcript of this episode, as well as additional links. So without further ado, let's get straight in to this interview. Hey, Katie, welcome officially to the Pioneering Today podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
I know, it's funny. You and I talk almost daily. And when I got my milk cow, bless your heart, I think you answered 501 texts and voice messages in the space of 24 hours. So yeah. I feel like everybody should already know you just because you're such a huge part of my life. So I'm excited to have you on.
Well, I'm excited to be here, and I was excited to be able to answer your questions. And I have a dairy friend who's my mentor also, and I couldn't do what I do without him. So, everybody needs that text, so I was very happy to do it.
Thank you. And I'm excited though today, one, for people to hear your story, but also because I feel like I have a very rudimentary understanding of A2A2 and what that exactly what it is and why certain people need it and why a lot of people are finding that and seeking it out. But a lot of people also don't know what it is. In fact, funny story, I was at a grocery store that did have they had raw milk. It was not A2A2, but they had raw milk. And this was before I had Clover and found my current source. So I could go there and she was on the phone and I was waiting for her to check me out. And she's like, you want what kind of milk? And then I heard her say, A2A2. And she put the customer on hold and she's looking around for one of the other cashiers and she's like, do we have A2A2 milk? And I'm like,
Oh,
no, you
goodness.
don't. You
No.
don't. Because it would be prominently displayed, and I've already looked up where your source is, and it's raw milk, but it's not A2A2. She's like, okay, thanks. And so she tells the customer, but she had no idea what it was. And so I gave her just like this real brief, but I'm like, oh, I'm glad she didn't ask me any more questions because I'm not sure I could have answered them correctly. So obviously, we're going to be talking about raw milk and A2A2, but what led you down the path of discovering what it was?
So my rabbit hole to the A2 was I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease in my early 30s and quite unhealthy. Stuck in bed. My mom was taking care of my kids. My husband was in the harvest. And I had gone to the rheumatologist and we were doing steroids and injectable anti-inflammatories, and I'd reached this point in my treatment where I was feeling really good and I was improving, but he was no longer allowed to give me as much steroids anymore because my kidneys couldn't handle it. And so he gave me another option and said, it's a tumor shrinking agent. And the terms he used was the big red flag for me. And went home and researched it and decided that was not right for our family. And my husband and I really went down this Google of, autoimmune diseases have been around for, 100 years plus, but we've been healing ourselves without chemotherapy, without steroids, without anti-inflammatories for thousands. So, what factor is it in there that I was missing in my day-to-day? Why at 31 years old was I stuck needing IV therapy? And, there's a million different diets, but we really came down to, everything in our home at that point was toxic, and we really didn't notice. We lived a very, very clean, what we thought was clean lifestyle. We always had a whole beef in the freezer. I canned our own food. We live out in the country, and I didn't realize that, the chemical in the toothpaste was making me flare. I didn't realize that my shampoo was making me flare. I didn't realize that the taco seasoning was making me flare. And I sure didn't realize that the dairy was making me flare. And as soon as I went on this really strict elimination diet, dairy, unfortunately, was one of my biggest triggers. And as like, I'm a Pacific Northwest person, so that means Tillamook. Tillamook is my favorite thing. I love cheese, and to find out that like, could commercial cheese and commercial dairy actually be making me sick? It was really like, no, there's no way. I eat organic tomatoes, and so I went into this rabbit hole of, okay, why 200 years ago were people able to drink dairy? Why 50 years ago were people able to drink dairy? And now every single person has a reaction. And in my healing process, of course, I needed certain foods in my diet, and that was, a grass-fed beef. I needed corn-free, soy-free poultry, and I needed a raw milk. And raw milk I could get. We do have, several raw milk farms around here. I didn't have any milk cows at that time. And then, it persisted of, well, I'm still sick with the raw milk, But so there has to be some other component. And like so many people, you know, they can drink the commercial milk just fine. And some people can drink raw milk just fine. But some people absolutely cannot drink either. And so for me, it was there's something else, you know. And then I learned about the A2 gene. And it's as confusing as it is, it's really not. It's pretty simple, you know. So when we first started domesticating dairy cows, you know, they were brought here, and you know, the first Holstein was like 1852 off of a sailboat in Massachusetts or something. And you know, they started bringing more and more in, and we were commercializing them. And in the back then, you know, everybody had a family cow. And then as soon as World War II hit, then, you know, the women went back to work and they had no time for the family milk cow. So they started relying on going to the grocery store and, you know, and working all at the same time. And as commercial dairies needed more milk in the grocery store to supply all the Americans that were working, they got more Holsteins. And Holsteins are not, I don't want to put them as like shaming them, because there are certain cows that have this A2 gene, and there are certain cows that do not have it. The reason commercially so many people say, you know, pasteurized commercial milk is A1 is because Holsteins in general have like a 26 to 50% likelihood that they are A2. So if you think about all the commercial dairies in the US, the majority of them are going to be an A1 cow. So that's where we get the, you know, the common conception that, you know, all commercial milk is A1. It's not. It is blended with an A2. We just, you know, there's no way you test for it, and it's so dominant with the A1 gene. And really what that A1 gene and A2 gene is, at the cow's sixth chromosome, there's the amino acid chain. And on the 67th of the 206th amino acid chain, there's a mutation. And that mutation, when you digest it, it's called A1. So old fashioned milk is all A2. So grandma's milk, your old neighbor's milk, growing up milk that you could digest, more than likely that was A2, because that was the family milk cow. That wasn't a largely commercial Holsteins. Most family cows were not Holsteins. They were Jerseys, they were Guernseys. And so the A2 gene is easily digestible, and we don't have issues with it. I say people don't have lactose intolerant with it. The A1 gene, when you digest it, what happens is it actually develops what's called BCM7. And that little bugger is the issue. And especially with people with a gut health issue, which the majority of our common, you know, human diet, we don't have proper gut health.
Yeah.
And that's where you get digestive issues from dairy. That's where you get rashes from dairy, and even neurological, you know, forgetfulness and behavior issues with dairy. And it's that BCM7 that really is to blame. And, you know, it's really hard to, with anything that has a healing mechanism, or somebody has found studies of a healing mechanism, there's equal amount of conflict with it. You know, and so that's why some people are, I mean, you're either pro A2, or you don't know about it, or you are anti A2. And, you know, for your lady in the grocery store, do we have A2 milk? Let me tell you, if a dairy farm has A2 milk, they advertise it.
That's what I told her.
So when people, you know, say like, oh, I don't know if my cows are A2, or, you know, they do. Like, if you are in the raw milk business, like, you know, if your cows are A2, because you want to promote it, because it is so vastly different, and your clientele is hugely different too. And so are the margins. So, you know, your common cows, your family milk cows, they're more than likely A2.
Okay. So that was one of my questions, mm-hmm. is, are there more breed specific that, mm-hmm. as long as they're not crossed, obviously, like they're whole, purebred is what I actually meant to say, that they're more likely percentage-wise to be A2A2, or you're like, oh no, if they are 100% Jersey or 100% Guernsey, then they are A2A2, or can there be still percentages where it's higher likelihood they're A2A2 if they're those breeds? Just like with the Holstein, because you said that there could be 26 to 50% could be A2A2, but you have also a very large portion that could be A1A1. Is that true for the other breeds? Like, can you just say, oh, if you've got 100% Jersey, then you're A2A2?
Is that? No, unfortunately, you can't say it, and you can't tell by even looking at a dairy cow. And, you know, in the entire world, there's like 920 different dairy cows and breeds of dairy cows. But, you know, in the United States, there's six that are the most common. You know, there's the Jersey, Ayrshire, Brown Swiss, Milking Shorthorn, Guernsey, and the Holstein.
Okay.
And your top ones for likelihood at 80% are the Jersey and the Milking Shorthorn, followed by the Guernsey and Brown Swiss at like 70%. So, I mean, more likely than not, your brown cows will be A2. I personally have owned an A2 Holstein. So they do exist. They're a little bit of unicorns right now, but you are seeing it more and more because people are aware of this genetic mutation. So, you know, people that have an A1 Holstein are breeding it to an A2 bull to 50% likely to have a A2 calf. So you can breed out in the generation A1. The A1.
Okay. Yes. So, say I'm going to look, because this is kind of hypothetical, but probably just a little bit future down the road. If I'm like, okay, we're going to get another milk cow and I want to make sure that it's A2A2. Is there like some type of registry other than, I'm sure in the AI, if you're looking, you know, for artificial insemination, that you could probably filter that way. But is there like a registry for A2A2 dairies or sources, both if I wanted to find A2A2 milk, but also breed-wise, like if I wanted to buy an A2A2 milk cow, how would I ensure that?
So really your best sources are rawmilk.com or I think it's getrawmilk.com. And those will show raw dairies. And again, if their cows are A2, they're going to put that right in their statement. You know, mine says something like Milhorn Farmstead raw A2A2 certified Jersey milk.
Okay, so it's a certified that you're looking for.
I say certified because in order to figure out if your cow is A2 or A1, you will want to take a DNA sample. Okay. And so I send that DNA sample to UC Davis, and then they send me the certificate that says the cow is without the A1 genetic. And there's actually like 15 different types of A1 and A2. But in all, it really equals A1 or A2. You know, there's A1B and C and E, but it's either, they either have the mutation or they don't.
Okay. So when you say a DNA sample, is it always blood? Mm-hmm. Is it a hair follicle or milk?
You can do both.
Okay.
Yeah, you can. The easiest way, and you know, it's perfect for backyard farmers, hobby farmers. If you've got one cow, two cow, you know, I've got a giant herd of cow and I still test this way. You just at what's called a tail switch. So where the tail is really hard, you know, then right where the hair starts coming out, right? You just grab, you need 25 follicles and you just kind of twist it a little bit and you just pull up and you just grab a chunk of hair from the tail. And then you fill out a form on UC Davis and mail it in there. And within like 15 days, they send you everything you need to know.
Okay.
It's really cost effective. It's like $25. And when you're purchasing a cow, I won't purchase it, even though they claim it's A2. I pull tail hairs before I even trade any type of money. It's just like, I only want A2 on my farm. My customers rely on me to have A2 on my farm. So it's so easy. It's just one simple thing to not regret a purchase.
No, that's really good. And it's funny because we just bought which I'm curious because I know you had them too, but you don't milk them. Scottish Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
We got a bull and the guy that we bought him from thought that the owner had done the tail switch.
Yeah.
And sent it in to get his registration papers. And so he was telling him, I need you to transfer ownership to us. And he's like, oh, I didn't actually grab the sample. Like, here's the form and here's all the info on his heritage, but I need you to grab the tail switch, which when we bought him, I thought, well, if he is registered, like, that's great because eventually we'll sell him, you know, once we've got, you know, enough breeding down the line that we wouldn't want him back breeding to any of his granddaughters, et cetera. But I've never tail switched before. And I'm like, is he going to kick me? Like, does it hurt? Or is it usually, are they pretty docile or like keep a good swing radius?
You know, sometimes, like, I think it just startles them. I try to brush them with like a curry comb. So like they're having quite the bit of stimulation, you know, so they know that I'm messing around. They know that, you know, I might not be overly gentle and then I do it. So it's not like you're just walking up to a sleeping cow and just yank out a chunk of its tail, you know.
You might get
I let them know, like I let her know she's there. And, you know, with the Scottish Highlanders, so more likely than not, unless there is some type of crossbreed, they are A2.
Okay. And that was where I was going with that. Okay.
Yes. In my dairy, I no longer run dairy bulls. They're mean, they're aggressive. I don't want them around my children. And so I only run Scottish Highlander bulls to breed my dairy cows. And we get fluffy little A2 babies and they're perfect for, you know, a dual purpose. If you have a bull, then I mean, their Jersey meat is delicious. Like, people knock it because it's not a standard Angus or a Hereford, but it is delicious. It's really fork tender. And then you add the Scottish Highland in there and it's twice as good. It's super marbled, you know, and as far as, you know, if you're looking for a good family homestead cow, really the crossbreed between a dairy and a Scottish Highlander is ideal, especially in the Pacific Northwest. You know, while you might not get the higher milk production of a dairy cow, you also don't have the scrawny body type of a dairy cow, which goes really well with our hard winters. You also have the more fur to keep them warm, and they're not as picky about their feed. You know, Scottish Highlanders in general are foragers. And, you know, we're dairy cows. They are picky. They are the most high maintenance women on the face of the planet. And then you find those two and you got one that is not a very wasteful cow. Like, they're pretty self-sufficient.
Okay. Two questions. Mm-hmm. One, butterfat.
Yes.
Because usually Jersey is known for having a higher butterfat overall than like Holstein and some of your other breeds. Mm-hmm. And if you're into, you're into butter and cream, which I am, hallelujah. I really like that. Mm-hmm. But I was reading that the Scottish Highlands have even a higher butter fat than the Jersey. Have you ever milked any of your Scottish Highlands?
Not pure. Okay. Mostly because my milking parlor is not set up for the horns. I do not dehorn them. I think that's part of their beautiful nature. So I leave that all attached. And there's no way to get them into my head shoots. But the Highland Jerseys, they're a little, they still have that Jersey curl, you know, so they can kind of maneuver their way in there. But the thing with having the Jersey Highland with horns and then Jerseys without horns is those that have horns know they have horns and they use them against them. So I try to recommend to people, if you're going to have horned cattle, then have horned cattle. If you're going to have dehorned cattle, then do that. Try not to intermix them because they do beat each other up and your cows scar and they get hematomas in their udder. It's just something you shouldn't intermingle.
Okay, that's good to know because we are going to move some of our Angus herd down to the farm stay where the Scottish Highlands are, but we could definitely cross fence and keep separate paddocks for each of the herds.
I will run my Herefords. I've got a couple Herefords that I will run with the Scottish Highlanders because they are twice their size. These are the biggest girls I've ever seen. They're like mammoth cows. They're like, you know, the old ox from 7,000 years ago. Like, they're big girls.
Okay. But
they hold their own. If they were weakly or
young,
smaller, I would not put them in there.
Okay, that's good to know. So don't put the yearlings in. But maybe some of our big, probably in my real, I got one herd boss Angus right now. And Yeah, she lets you, so she probably would do okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good to know. And part of me is like, I know some of my Scottish Highlands, they're due to start calving in August and September, and I don't have a milk cow.
Can I milk that?
There's a part of me that's like, can I milk it?
Yeah.
And I'm like, super, we'll find, it depends on if I get, like you said, a head shoot, because they're not tame. Yeah. We're working on gentling right now. They'll eat out of my hand. They stay kind of on guard. Like they'll take a treat.
Yeah.
And I, while they're eating the treat, if there's another one there, I can scratch like under their chin, but I can't like pull on,
yeah,
you know, get in and truly pet them yet. But I will be looking at head shoots. Actually, I'm really excited for the Modern Homesteading Conference, which for those of you who don't know, Katie is my co-founder. Like we started the Modern Homesteading Conference together, and there is going to be a vendor there that has, you explain it because you actually talked to him before me, but it's a round pen with a head shoot, right?
Yeah, it's called the Homestead Package, and it's an AeroQuip setup. And they, you know, they'll be at conference, they will have cattle in there, and they'll be able to work them and show you, you know, how to maneuver them in there. And I'm super excited. Well, anything cows, I'm super excited about. But, and then, cheese from scratch, Robin will be there and she'll be talking cows and, making cheese. And of course, you know, I'm thinking I should bring a milk cow, you know, which we might, who knows where we end up with that. But, yeah.
So with the round pen one, this one has a head shoot that's part of the round pen, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a,
yep.
I was trying to explain it to Clay and I'm like, you'll get to see it at conference because I know with the Highlands, because they're not tame yet. And I'm also, sorry, this whole podcast episode was supposed to be about A2, but once we start talking cows, like watch out because Katie and I can go all day long. And she's had Scottish Highlands where I've not had that breed before and they're not completely tame yet. So I'm kind of praying that they all have heifers because if they have bulls, obviously we're going to ban them. We're not going to keep them as bulls.
Mm-hmm.
But they have horns. All of our cows, none of our existing herd have horns. So when we go to grab babies to ban, to castrate, you know, you can just have someone standing between you and baby and telling mama it's okay and you're good to go. But she doesn't have horns to come at you. So with your experience with the Scottish Highlands, are they more aggressive when you're dealing with their babies? Like if you have to ban or how?
Mine are not. My Highlands are so docile. And, you know, there's a few that are more than the others. You know, there's several that we can go brush and they want scratches, and there's some that I don't bother them, but they're not like, oh yay, snack lady's here, you know? So there, you know, there's a few that I'm like, I could probably milk you. And there's, you know, even now we just got done with calving out our Highlands. I think we had 20 some calves. And we banned in the field, you know, this year we didn't have to rope any, we didn't have to use horses at all. It's just me and my farmhand Tegan on foot, you know, grab calf and ear tag it, band it. And mama's just like, you know, she's eating hay. She's happy. She knows that we're not going to harm the baby because we've never harmed anything, you know, down there. Like we're not a threat to them because we're there every single day. My kids are down there every single day. You know, they're not like, oh, there's that scary woman that brought her dogs and, you know, they're biting at my, like they know we're not a threat. So they actually, you know, their calves they're probably easier to work in honesty than my Jersey calves. Like the Jersey mamas are pretty feisty. And when we have to take those calves or work the calves or band them, like, I'll actually put the John Deere gator between the calf and mama just in case I need to hop in because some of them are just darn mean, you know?
Yeah. We actually, when you were talking about dairy bulls, I don't know if did I tell you the story about the dairy bull last week that was got loose in our neighborhood?
No.
Oh gosh. Okay. We've got a little bit of time, but then I do actually have a couple questions. I'm going to circle us back to the A2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a call from one of my neighbors and he's like, can you hear me? I have laryngitis
on
the phone. And I'm like, yeah, I make it out what you're saying. It's okay. And he's like, well, I was just calling to let you know that your Highlands, because they're at our farm stay and it's a half mile down the road from us, but I can't visually like see my herd from our house. Mm-hmm. And so he lives across the street, which is great to have neighbors that keep an eye on your place. So he said, the neighbors two pastures back from you, their cows are out. And I'm like, okay. And he said, but the bull is really aggressive. And I'm like, oh, okay. They have a bull. And obviously we have a bull. I'm like, okay. And he said, and they're right next to your fence line right now. They were in my yard, but now they've moved and they're looking across the fence at your cows and they're just kind of staring off right now. I'm like, okay. He's like, but that boar's so aggressive. And he says boar. So first he said bull and then I heard boar, but he has laryngitis and I'm like, I just must be hearing things, right? I'm like, okay. So he said, I'm not coming out of my house right now because that's how aggressive it was in our yard. And I'm like, oh gosh. And I said, okay. So I'm like, all right. So I get in the truck and I grab my pistol and I'm like, well, I'm just going to drive down and see, but I'll stay in the truck, but I got to see what's going on. So I get down there and they're at from where the driveway is where I can actually get the truck. They're at the opposite end of the field and they're looking through their fence at where our Highlands are. And my bull, of course, is standing there, the ladies are behind him, but nobody's doing anything. And from a distance, there was three cows. And I'm like, boy, that's a real small bull. I'm used to our big Angus and Hereford bulls. Like, there's some meat there. And I'm like, boy, I don't know if that's actually a bull. It has horns. I think he just saw horns and thought it was a bull.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden it starts like tossing hay and grass. I mean, just showing off big old fit, and it turns and I get a better look at it and I'm like, oh, it's a dairy bull.
Oh no. Yeah.
Like, it is a bull, but it's a dairy bull. It's a short horn dairy bull. And I'm like, okay, this adds a little bit more complexity to the story. So I'm like, I'm not getting out with that thing. They are loco.
They are.
Yeah. And so he starts to turn. It looks like he's going away from my fence line back up his driveway, which is long. And I'm like, oh, great. He's going to take his ladies and go home. Nobody's fighting through the fence. I'm good. So I had to go pick up 12 baby ducklings that had just landed at the post office. So I'm like, go get my baby ducks and then I'll come back and check. But they're on their way. They're leaving. All's going to be fine. So I go get my baby ducks and I'm coming back around. Our post office is just a couple miles from our house. And my other neighbor calls me as I'm just hitting our road. And she's like, have you heard about the bull that's out? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, but it looked like he was going back home. She's like, no, I'm standing in the road right now. And they're now in the yard of your farm stay. Thankfully, we didn't have any guests that day. But they're at the fence line again with your cows, but they're actually in your yard now. And I'm like, okay. I said, well, I'm almost there. I said, it's a dairy bull. Please don't get close. Cause she's lovely, but doesn't know anything about cows much yet. Yeah. And she's like, oh, okay. So I get there. And they're in my yard, but there's also like this 600-pound huge pig with them. There was and a bull. I'm like, you can't be making this stuff up.
No.
So then you've got, there's a CSA farm there. And so you have the farm workers and they've got these big sticks because these cows were trying to get in the fields where they were working. And this bull is aggressive and it's coming at them. So thankfully they were smart. They got these big branches to fend them off, but they're pushing them the opposite way of what their driveway and home field is. Cause they're just trying to get them away from it. They didn't know where they came from. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, everybody, you see that black one, that's a bull. And you need to make sure you stay really far away from it, kind of going over everything. I said, but we need to drive them back the other way. We've got to go in our field and get around them to push them back. Cause right now you're taking them further and further away from home. And they're like, okay. So I throw them in the back of my truck and we're, cowboy and we're going to get them. Well, the sheriff got called because the owners, for whatever reason, she wasn't able to come out and help get the cows back.
Yeah.
And you've got them in all these people's yards and whatnot. So the sheriff comes driving up, two sheriffs, and he gets out and I meet him and I've got my gun in one hand, which I'm totally licensed and, all of the proper stuff. And then I've got a long stick in the other. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, hey, how you doing, officer? And he's like, well, da da da. And I said, do you know anything about cows? And he's like, no. And I'm like, okay. So I fill him in, And he's like, oh. And I said, you know, I said, I'm really sorry. I can't stay and help you anymore because I had a class I was supposed to be at in like 20 minutes and I have baby ducks in my truck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so good luck, you know, and went through, stay away from that one, you know, keep mm-hmm. wide berth, all the things. So 5 hours later, my husband Clay's coming home from work. It's been 5 hours. And he's like, the sheriffs are still out there. He's like, no. And there's a meat truck now. And I'm like, they're still out there? I'm like, this has been over half the day.
Yeah.
And so I called my neighbor because they were in, it was more her yard at that point than mine. And they, that dairy bull attacked and gored someone's leg. And so yep. they ended up putting it down. Yep. But I'm like, oh my goodness. So yes, to your story, dairy bulls mm-hmm. are just loco. So yeah. I think it's, yeah. Anyways, that was my cow excitement story.
You know, I used to be a really big bull snob, you know, and I sought out a A2 New Zealand Kiwi bull. And I spent this ungodly amount of money on him. And I mean, he was little tiny, and we called him Kiwi. And he had all these fantastic genetics for my A2 herd I was growing. And he was a bottle baby. And I was like, oh, good, you know, being naive. Oh, a bottle baby, they're going to be twice as nice. I'll never have an issue with him. And they're the meanest things ever. Like that, he tried to kill me. We ended up and ate him. He was delicious. It was fine. But there's, you know, there's this misconception that if you raise them bottled, then they are going to be nice because you're the mother, you're the nurturer. And it's actually, it plays opposite, where then you become a threat because you were dominant. And now he wants to be dominant.
Oh.
So actually dairy bulls that are bottle raised are twice as angry and aggressive as ones that are raised by their mother.
Yeah. Do you know why? I have no idea because I haven't researched it. Is there like a certain reason that dairy bulls are so much meaner or more aggressive than other breeds, no. It seems, or it seems to just roll that way?
It just seems to roll that way. And I have found that 18-month mark. I can keep a dairy bull until literally like the day they turn 18. And then they're mean. And dairy bulls when they gain a bunch of testosterone, their face turns really dark. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they hit that mark and their face starts to turn, they have to go, you know, you can hear them. We used to milk at like 4 a.m. and during winter here, I mean, it's black as black till like 7:30. And in order to get the cows, they were in heat. So the bull is out there with them. And, you know, at 4 a.m, we're going out there with this big spotlight looking for the cows because the cows are like, I don't want to get up. I'm still tired. So we have a flashlight in one hand and a bat in the other because we couldn't see the bull in the pasture full of cows, but we could hear him. And you can hear him like growling, like, and, you know, you're turning around and looking for this bull, like trying to not get gorged, but trying to like wake up your sweet little dairy cow. You know, I'm like, come on, Sherry, it's time to milk. And then you can hear him somewhere, but you can't see him. And eventually I was like, I don't trust them. I can't trust, you know, we do a lot of farm tours, you know, what if one of those kiddos jumped the fence, you know, he would charge right at the fence, come right at him and then stop short of the fence. And I'm like, what if he got out? I couldn't do it. So now we run, you know, big lazy Highlands, and half the time when a cow's in heat, I have to encourage him, like, come on, Norman, today's the day. And he's like, let me, you know, eat some grass first. I'm like, you are the laziest cow I've ever met, laziest bull ever. But yeah, long are the days of me raising dairy cows. To me, it's just not worth it. If I wanted dairy genetics, I will AI them. I won't have another dairy cow.
Yeah, dairy bull.
Yeah, dairy bull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yes, after I'd heard people say, you know, kind of just heard that, mm-hmm. that dairy bulls are crazy. But actually seeing that up close, I'm with you. I'm like, no, thank you.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So back to the A2A2 though. Mm-hmm. So for somebody who is wondering, like, is that has a problem with dairy or suspects that they do have a problem with dairy, right? And so they're wondering, like, okay, I wonder if I am unable to process the A1 mm-hmm. and that's my problem. But if raw milk and A2, then I would be good. Is there any tests that you can take, or it's just try the A2 and see how you react?
It really is. As far as I know, there are no tests. I would say 50% of my clientele is lactose intolerant, and then probably another 35% are infants, you know, whose mother cannot breastfeed or chose not to breastfeed, or they didn't want a formula. And they're able to drink the A2 cow milk because human milk is naturally A2. So is sheep milk and goat milk. So when you go to the doctor and you're like, oh, I'm lactose intolerant, I'm having these things, and he's like, okay, drink goat milk. It's because it's naturally A2. You know, so is buffalo milk and camel milk, and which now you're seeing on the market for camel milk, which is funny. But there's really not a test. And unfortunately, you know, you have destroyed the gut for years and years. And so some people will try A2 milk, an A2 milk, and then say, oh no, I had gut issues, or I got a rash. Well, you know, they didn't build Rome in a day. You cannot rebuild your gut flora with 3 sips of milk. You know, and I tell people, like, give it 10 good days, take your time, like, don't guzzle milk. You know, if you've been lactose intolerant for 20 years, don't do that. Take your time, rebuild the flora, and it will come back. The testimonies I have for the A2 milk is absolutely, it's unreal. You know, I've been able to drink milk as a child, but now as an adult, I can't. I've been getting rashes, and, or I, you know, have bad gut health, or this happens to me. And, so it's what I tell people. I'm like, you're not lactose intolerant. You're A1 intolerant. You know, it's causing issues in your digestive system. And, you know, I actually have lots of clients that have, their children have autism. And the thing with the A1 milk is BCM7 is actually a morphine like opiate, which can cross the blood brain barrier, and that can cause behavior issues and neurological issues. So that's where lots of the autism parents come, and they're like, I have to try this other product because my child's having these issues. Is there anything else? You know, you're looking, you know, for things to heal, and we've got great success, you know, on our farm with testimonies, you know. But as far as, you know, testing, you really got to give it that gut try. And, you know, I tell people, I'm like, I'm going to take it to a meeting and drink, you know, a jug of milk today, you know, take your time, make some yogurt, heal your gut, and, you know, you should get it back.
Yeah. Do you think when someone's testing to see if they can handle the A2, if they've been drinking the A1, would you recommend kind of like almost like a rest period so that before trying the A2, or does it stay in the system very long? Because, you know, there's some things like you consume and they can cause such a reaction that those inflammatory markers are there for so many days post eating whatever the item was or consuming it. So you can still be having reactions, but it's not what you're currently eating. It's just taking it that long to clear out of the system. And I have no idea if that's the case with milk too.
I tell people that while they are adjusting to it, to focus on gut health, you know, the kombuchas, sauerkraut, fermented foods, yogurts, anything you can do to encourage positive growth in your gut. And, you know, don't cold turkey it. So, you know, I don't think I've ever told anybody to, you know, stop and take a month off. I just say, really reiterate, you know, let's focus on gut health your body learns to digest dairy again.
Yeah. And you guys, I know too, and I think this is an important part. There's the A2 and there's the raw, and those really, when you have those two together, becomes that powerhouse.
It really does. And you see now in the market, there is what's called A2 milk. And so as a dairy farmer, I have to be really cautious about how I say A2 milk because it's actually trademarked. And so is the word A1 milk. So as a producer, legally, I can't say A2 milk. So yeah, you gotta love consumerism.
It's trademarked. Yeah. Okay, sorry, that took me a minute to process.
Yeah, so in most grocery stores now, you can find A2 milk, and it's in a red carton, red and white carton, and it is a company out of New Zealand. It's owned by, I believe, Fonterra, which is the largest traded dairy product in the world, but it is not raw. So if you can drink pasteurized milk, or you don't want to drink raw milk, there is alternatives that are commercially produced.
Yeah. From a gut health standpoint, though, I'm with you. It's the A2A2 with the raw, and also with what the animal's being fed, because you can have raw A2A2 milk, but if they're being fed a primary GMO corn, grain-based diet, then you could still have issues with that as well. So yeah, it's kind of the whole package.
Yeah, you can definitely, it makes a powerhouse, the A2 and the raw. And, you know, you can definitely have a reaction to what the cow is eating. And, you know, lots of people are really encouraging on, you know, oh, I can only have grass-fed raw milk. Well, unfortunately, here in the Pacific Northwest, we only have 90 days of grass, if that. And what people don't know is, you know, when grass is green and it's lush, it's filled with beautiful sugar. And the cow can, they can eat that all day long and have no issues and don't need, you know, a grain supplement. And once that hay is cut and it's dried, the sugar actually begins to dissipate. And while the stomach of the cow is a giant fermentation vat, you know, you have to feed your sourdough and you feed your kombucha. It's the same with the cow. You have to make sure they have a carbohydrate to keep that rumen heavy or to operating. So, you know, you don't have to substitute with a GMO. It's just, that is what is commercially available. So if you go to the, you know, your farm supplier co-op, that is typically what they have. They're filled with corn, they're filled with soy or beet pulp. You know, my main base is a flaxseed. It's just got enough starch in it that it keeps that rumen happy. But I get mine locally milled because I have a specific clientele. I personally have a specific diet that I want my cows to follow, and that, you know, my clients want my cows to follow. But, and if you have, you know, one cow, it's not easy to just go to a female and say, oh, mix me up 2,000 pounds of special dairy feed. So it's easy to grab a bag from, you know, your farm supply, but it doesn't always have the best things in it.
Yeah. And there are, I know, because I have specifically sought out that you can find, not always at farm supply stores, that part is absolutely right, but you can, if you're willing to do some online ordering or to really do some shopping, and you will pay more usually for it. But I have been able to find at least a GMO-free version of different feeds to bring in during the off season. And curious about the sugar content in haylage, because you have so much more moisture in there, right? In the product, does that keep the sugar, or does it tend to drop the same as dry hay, or is it a little bit higher in carbs? Do you know?
I believe it's higher, and we don't have haylage. Unfortunately, that's not something we have here. I'm sure I could get it in. I know Anne of All Trades is big on her chaffe. But if I had something like that, I might not need to supplement. The other thing that people need to consider is cows are just like people. They are not one size fits all. So just because your cow, Mary Beth, can have a grass-fed only diet, that doesn't mean, you know, your cow Daisy can. They're just like humans. You know, your sister can eat only salads and she's perfectly perfect, and you eat only salads and your body's weak and your brain's not operating correctly. Not every cow is exactly the same, even if they're related. Every cow needs a specific nutritional plan based on their structure and what they're producing, and if they're bred, and, you know, the nutritional value of the current ground below them.
Yeah. No, I think that's really smart to say, because oftentimes I know we can get excited. I get excited about grass-fed, grass-finished, and that works great with our Angus. It works phenomenally well with Scottish Highland, as we just came off of winter. And the way they have ate the brush back.
Yes.
It's amazing.
They're like goats.
They are. I could not believe it. They cleared some sections for us that we were going to have to go in and brush hog. And I'm like, Look at you guys. Yeah. Like, yeah. So anyways, totally another subject, but I think it's really important that we bring this up that yes, I mean, in an ideal world, grass-fed and grass-finished, mm-hmm. I do believe is the best way to go. But
for sure.
Having went through losing Clover mm-hmm. and her not doing as well on that, even though the vet did think there was some that she might have had cancer, based upon her metabolic lab panels, mm-hmm. there was more going on. It wasn't that she wasn't getting the food. Something was going on with her ability to absorb it. But regardless, having went through that, if your animal is not doing well, mm-hmm. like you're saying, on grass-fed only, then you have to make some adjustments to how they're being fed. And like same thing, like I'm sure you probably have experienced this too, is, you know, I had horses and some of them did phenomenal during the summer, but you would say, man, they're a hard keeper in the winter. And mm-hmm. The same thing with the cows, like some of them are just going to require more or in addition things when the weather's really nasty, which here in the West, especially the Northern West where you and I are, I mean, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
Our weathers are so harsh. Yeah.
They are. And there's, you know, you're hay feeding for 10 months and it's expensive but every cow needs its own nutritional plan. You know, it's just like people, but we fail. We're like, oh, it's a cow. Like they're very different.
Yeah. Even amongst the breeds. Well, I know you and I could talk for hours about cows mm-hmm. because we certainly have, but I wanted to thank you so much for taking time out today because I know that you have got some babies that are supposed to hit the ground with some pregnant mamas today.
I do. We are in Jersey calving week. It is the happiest week, and cheers to milk supply going up and little fresh babies. And I just cannot wait. So yes, I need to head back to the pasture and check my mamas.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on. And for all of those of you who are listening and watching, if you haven't grabbed your tickets yet to the Modern Homesteading Conference, you still have time. We would love to see you there. And hopefully you will get to see some milk cows in action. I know we're going to have milk goats, but we're hoping mm-hmm. to have a milk cow on site too. So we look forward to seeing you there. Well, I hope that you enjoyed that episode as much as I did, as I shared when Katie and I get to talking about cows. You never know where the conversation may lead. And I got so excited with telling stories and just all of the things that we were talking about that I forgot. I normally, you'll notice if you've been listening for a while, when I do an interview, I always ask the guest where people can best follow along with them if they want to go further. And of course, if you come to conference, which you can get tickets at modernhomesteading.com. We hope to see you there in person. But Katie is at millhornfarmstead.com, as well as on Instagram and Facebook under Millhorn Farmstead. So we will make sure that we link to those in the blog post beneath the video description so you can check that out and see all of Katie's wonderful cows, including hopefully pictures of those Jersey babies that crossed with the Scottish Highland Bull that should be hitting the ground. She was heading out to check right when we got done with this interview. So any day now, and this episode is going live within just a few days of us recording it. So if you follow along there with her social, I know you'll get to see some fun baby calf pictures. Now, on to our verse of the week. We are in Romans chapter 8, and this is the Amplified translation of the Bible. And we're in Romans chapter 8 and actually reading through verse 31. We are assured and know that God, being a partner in their labor, all things work together and are fitting into a plan for good, to and for those who love God and are called according to his design and purpose. For those whom he foreknew, of whom he was aware and loved beforehand, he also destined from the beginning, foreordaining them to be molded into the image of his Son and share inwardly his likeness, that he might become the firstborn among many brethren. And those whom he thus foreordained, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified, acquitted, made righteous, putting them into right standing with himself. And those whom he justified, he also glorified, raising them to a heavenly dignity and a condition or state of being. What then shall we say to all this? If God is for us, who can be against us? Who can be our foe if God is on our side? And I have to say that is one of, and I probably say this every week when I share the verse of the week, this is one of my favorite passages. But really, this is one of those passages of scripture that I go to when I need to be reassured. So if I'm going through a rough time or there's a hard situation, knowing that no matter what it might look like, God's word and promise says that as long as I love him and am seeking him and his will, that he is going to work out things and is fitting together a plan for my good. And then the verse 29, and really even 39, but especially 29, is remembering, if I start to get a little cocky, that God called me. For every single one of us that are saved and a believer in Jesus Christ, or feel like God is tugging at you and you're starting to walk down that path to having a relationship with him and reading the Bible and all of that, none of that is because let me rephrase that. It is because we decided, right? God gives us free will. So we have a choice whether or not we're going to follow him, but it's because he first called us. And that's kind of amazing to think that God called each one of us. He has been coaxing us and calling us, and it's not because of our own strength or anything that we did. It's because he loves us and he has been calling us to his side. And that tends to take a lot of pressure off of myself and puts my focus back on where it should be, which is on God. And that also, if he called us, which he did, because his word says, and God cannot lie, and his word is always true, then he has justified us, right? Through right standing with Jesus Christ and his sacrifice. And when we confess Jesus as our Savior and come under that blood sacrifice that Jesus' death gave us to wash away our sins, we are put into right standing because we are under that covenant of Jesus, which means that we are justified and glorified through that. And so therefore, God is for us. Who can be against us? If you sit and think about that, if you're in a place of worry or anxiety or an uncertainty, which can be very easy to reach those places in today's world, right? But if you just sit and meditate on that, if God is for you, who can be against you? Nobody is bigger than God. Nothing is bigger than God. And he is for you. He is fighting your battles, even if you don't see it, or even if you don't feel like it. He is warring for you. And he is for you. So it doesn't matter who or what tries to come against you. Ultimately, they cannot succeed because God is for you and there's nothing bigger than God. And that alone brings me so much comfort. And sometimes I need to be reminded of it because I am human. And sometimes I can let my mind drift to places of, you know, anxiety and worry and all of those things. But what a powerful verse. If God is for us, who can be against us? So I would love to wrap up our episode with that bit of scripture and reminder to you as well as to myself. And I hope that I get to see you in person at conference. And if not, or if so, either way, I will be back here with you next week on our next episode of the Pioneering Today podcast.